Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor, Reality Books, presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. A brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Booker T. Washington, African American Family Room Forum. We are certainly thankful that you've joined us this evening, this beautiful, at least here in Augusta, Georgia, spring evening as we approach the beginning of the summer season with all that it entails. And people, as I was out today with my wife traveling about the city of Augusta in the commercial areas, are getting out, and they're getting out in droves. People are ready to put the coronavirus challenges behind, even though the scientists say that the coronavirus is still alive and very well and still ravaging in many places. Some states are suffering more victims than others. But the mood, it seems, at least here in Georgia, is to put the threat, the fear, the challenges of the pandemic behind us and move on with our lives to get ready to go back to not necessarily business as usual, but the America that we all know and love in terms of the freedoms that we've come to greatly enjoy and appreciate. Anyway, we thank everyone who's joined our panel tonight, and we'll be calling on you individually, but we want to welcome all of you who have arrived so far. Several may still be coming in, and we want to do a radio check this time with our co-host. Thank you, Mr. Bianchi, for your presence, and how are you able to hear me right now?
Best ever.
Best ever. That's wonderful. I like that. Well, that's great. A lot of things have to converge to get that kind of signal, so we appreciate all of those that are involved in factoring in the technical aspects of our success with the signal tonight. So we thank you, and of course we want to welcome Sheikh John Kenan Bay and Brother Warren, and we're looking for others hopefully to join us to be on our panel tonight. But we've got a good group here as we began the show, and I want to invite all of you who are listening via the internet, because I have noticed as I've looked at the weekly statistics that we have generally about three times as many people listening via the internet as we have actually participating live on our panel. So we want to invite all of you who are listening via the internet to join our discussion. All you have to do is just dial in, and you're free to comment on whatever we're talking about. And if you have something else on your mind you would like to introduce for us to talk about, we welcome that. And the number to call is 657-383-0671. And I do plan to announce the number again in a few minutes. So if you have to get something with which to write, you have time to retrieve your writing materials, and I'll announce the phone number again for you to call in. So the topic tonight is this: should African Americans take the efforts of 43 states to, quote unquote, and I say this tongue in cheek, protect voting integrity, unquote, by restricting voting opportunities personally? In other words, should Americans feel offended and take it personally that 43 states at this time have begun efforts, and in this case, Georgia, there has been a new law passed, so the effort has actually been completed. But should African Americans take the efforts of 43 states to protect voting integrity, which is, as I say that tongue in cheek, and I put protect voting integrity in quotes because some people feel that it's really only to suppress voting. But should African Americans take this effort personally? And if so, what can be done to push back? Now, as I was watching the news just before I came into the studio, which is actually my family room, by the way. That's why we call it Family Room Forum, because I think of it as a cyber family room for all of us that are participating. But I'm actually in my family room broadcasting from here. And as I was watching on the news, there are activists of all colors, not just African Americans, who have begun to appear before state houses in various states protesting these new restrictive bills that have been introduced throughout the country that will virtually limit the opportunity for many people, especially elderly people, and in many cases minorities, to be able to cast votes. So that's the question. Should African Americans take the efforts of 43 states, that's the number so far, to have activities going on to push forward bills to protect voting integrity, as they call it, by restricting voting opportunities? Should African Americans take these efforts personally? And if so, what can be done to push back? We'll begin with our co-host, Mr. Piaki. What do you think?
No, matter of fact, I know I've heard some say they welcome the changes. But you got those that don't understand and go by what they hear, emotions and so on, and so on, and will do act accordingly.
Okay, I do want to. I don't want to impede you continuing. If you want to go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Okay, all right.
We're gonna move it along for you. You can get to your Mother's Day celebration with your wife.
Okay, we're gonna do that. We're gonna do that. But part of it started today when we went out shopping together. We always like to spend part of our Saturdays just being together, riding around in the vehicle, going to places she wants to go. So, you know, that was the kickoff of the weekend for Mother's Day. But anyway,
and I was just quoting an article in the Washington Post that says, opinion, no, Georgia's new voting law is not a return to Jim Crow. So it's not that much to talk about. Thank you.
Okay, well, yeah, sure. Thank you. Let me just share something that former First Lady Michelle Obama is quoted as having said. Former First Lady, this is from Newsweek magazine online. Former First Lady Michelle Obama has lashed out at, quote, partisan and unpatriotic, unquote, efforts to limit voting while urging the Senate, that's the United States Senate, to pass a voting rights bill championed by Democrats. Ms. Obama said that nothing is more, and this is a quote, nothing is more important to our democracy than safeguarding our right to vote, unquote, while promoting the passage of H.R. 1 Before the People Act on Thursday. The bill was approved in the House on Wednesday, albeit without the support of a single Republican. While urging the Senate to pass the bill, Ms. Obama denounced what she characterized as infuriating attempts by Republicans to restrict voting access at the state level. And let me just continue just briefly, very briefly. She said, quote, our democracy remains under attack by the partisan and unpatriotic actions of those at the state level who are doing everything they can to curtail access to the voting box. Make no mistake, the idea that we cannot both hold secure elections and ensure that eligible voters can make their voices heard is a false choice. It's based on lies, and it flies in the face of our history. It is sad. It's been infuriating, and it is a threat to our future. It must be taken seriously, unquote. And I'm going to conclude this information, this factual information. Lawmakers in 43 states had introduced 253 bills to restrict voting access as of February 19th, according to this think tank called the Brennan Center. The bills have been coming at breakneck pace. Only 165 similar measures in 33 states haven't been introduced weeks earlier. And we'll just wrap with that.
Well, you're breaking up now. I don't know what happened to your signal. You was good.
Yeah, but I haven't done anything different. And the things that interfere with signals, hey, me having this 24-plus years as a communications troubleshooter, I happen to know that there are gremlins, as we used to call them, that jump in on the ship.
We call them
gremlins. But anyway, we're going to move on, and hopefully we'll be able to hear each other. So
yeah, and I'll let it go around. I comment on Michelle Obama's statement. Thank you, sir.
Comment now?
Pardon me?
Michelle, want to comment on her statement now before we go through?
Well, yes. Her comment is way overboard. People compare Georgia with Colorado. Georgia has more options for votes than a Colorado. HR1 has provision in there with people shouldn't have to produce ID, from what I've heard. She's talking about a new Voters Rights Act. Well, the 1965 Voters Rights Act had nothing to do with voting. It had to do with registration. The voting came with the amendments in the United States Constitution. Black males had the right to vote before even white women did, according to the Constitution. So she's totally out of bounds. They're using words that excite people without them doing research, or they should know that that's just not the case. And another point, too, the Constitution gives state legislators the right to set the requirements for voting. If those rights seemingly is violating a U.S. citizen's due right to franchisement, then it should be challenged. But state legislatures have the right to control that ballot, and the Congress has the right and exceptions to control the federal ballot. Congress cannot control local ballots. Local and state ballots are controlled by the states themselves.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Jack. We're going to move around the virtual family room now. And before I bring on Brother Warren, who's next, I do want to make mention of the fact that it's okay to put any, I guess you might say, shade or what I would say perspective on the issue, as we would like to do, because this is a free forum. We can take it in whatever direction we want to, but to begin with, so our audience that's listening via the internet will be clear, the topic, as I will repeat it, is should African-Americans, we're talking about African-Americans, and we're talking about African-Americans' perspective. So the question is, should African-Americans take the efforts of 43 states to protect voting integrity, which is how it's being pushed, you know, by the people that are proposing these bills, to promote or protect voting integrity? And I said that tongue-in-cheek because others are saying that's not really the reason behind these bills, but they're being pushed to restrict voting by certain populations. And the interesting thing about it, a byproduct, is that it may end up restricting voting opportunities by some of the same people that these people that are introducing the bills would like to see vote, and these are the elderly white pro-Republican voters who need to use and have historically for many years been using absentee ballots, mail-in ballots rather, to vote. But these restrictions may make it harder for them, according to what some people are saying. But should African Americans take these bills, these restrictive bills, personally? And if so, what can be done? What can be done? I mean, what can really productively be done besides, you know, holding up placards or marching in front of the state capitals or the legislatures? You know, what real can happen? I'll tell you one, and then I'm going to move it over to Brother Warren. And this was brought up in one of the discussions on the news. African-Americans can learn what the laws are, make sure they stay within the guardrails, make sure they stay within the guidelines, and go vote. I mean, go vote like never before. Vote for legislatures that will rescind these restrictive laws if the black or African-American people feel that they're not really doing anything to promote voting opportunities. So let me move on. Brother Warren, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that Stevie Wonder could see what's going on. If Ray Charles were alive, he could see what's going on. These laws that are being pushed by Republican-dominated state legislatures are a response to the election of 2020. The demographics in America is working against the Republican Party. And so one is either naive or dishonest to think that the Republican legislatures are actually trying to put things in place to make it easier for their opponents to vote. That is, people who would vote Democrat. That's a dishonest. Anybody who claims to understand the American system and have a grasp of American history is dishonest to think that these state legislatures are trying to help. This is a continuation of the same old reaction of white races who want to maintain a grip and control over an element of the population that they feel they can't control anymore. When you look at, if you were to look at each of these states' rules being put in place for voting, if you look through them with a fine-tooth comb, you'll find all type of shady suggestions in many of these things. And it's all designed at the element of the population, whether they're African-American or Hispanic, that would tend to vote Democrat. That's what this is designed to do. The Voting Rights Act was a response to the fact in the South, in particular, blacks were being killed, beaten, intimidated, driven from the community, for attempting to go to their local courthouses to register to vote. I know about that real well, happened in my family. Okay, so so these things are a continuation of trying to, you know, this has always been the case in American history. Rules were put in place to control black people. If anybody done a historical study of all of these legislatures in the states since they had states, you would be surprised at all of the rules, the legislation being passed specifically to control black people. Now, what should black people do? Well, we should first focus on getting people out to the polls in a traditional manner, okay? And then we need to look at what is it that they put in place so that if you're at the polls in a traditional manner, is designed to prevent you from voting. The Republican Party is reacting to two things, one a reality and one a fantasy. The reality is the demographics are working against the Republican Party. The fantasy that the election of 2020 was stolen, that's what this reaction is all about. And so we as African people should always expect rules to be changed or laws to be made to restrict any type of mobility in us on any level, whether it's economic, education, et cetera. That's been the American story from the day one. And so, of course, we should take it personal because we know that what all this is designed for. You know, when black people go out and vote in large numbers and it doesn't work in their favor, you know, then it's, you know, we got to control these blacks. That's the mentality. You know, they had a state legislature the other day called a black woman buckwheat. You know, these people masks are falling off. Their masks are coming off. And, you had people, some of them are hypocrites. They get upset because we call Tim Scott Uncle Tim or Uncle Tom, but they call Maxine Waters Auntie Maxine, you see. So I don't call Tim Scott Uncle Tim or Uncle Tom. I just call him Handkerchief Head and all those who think like him. So this is a traditional reaction to a perception that blacks are out of hand and out of control. And so, therefore, laws that are passed at the state level to restrict what is perceived as black mobility is always the reaction. It's done for criminal justice system, laws relating to drugs. You see, they're changing the marijuana laws and making it legal now. But look how many black people's lives you can ruin. You have a reaction to the teaching of slavery. They don't want slavery to be taught in schools. In fact, one legislature here in Louisiana, because I know what's going on here, tried to suggest that, you know, slavery was good. And he did say that. In so many ways, he said that, you know, good. But you got handkerchief heads out there tearing the water for these kind of people, you know. You know, they look stupid anyway. Nobody has respect for them. So this is just the reaction you have on the ground when there's a perception in their mind that blacks are out of hand, blacks are out of control. We must pass laws. This has been going on from day one, and we should always expect this. So the solution should be, Mr. Washington, is we have to first focus on going to the, because they're restricting a lot of the early voting process. They're restricting the drop-off boxes. So even, and then even when you go to the polls, they're even criminalizing handing out water. You know, I mean, it just shows you just how petty, paranoid, insecure that these type of people who think that way are. So again, as I close for this part, one is dishonest to suggest that the changes in voting that these Republican-controlled legislations have put in place is for the benefit and the welfare of those voters who vote Democratic. It's designed to cut into those numbers to give the Republicans an advantage. Stevie Wonder could see it, and if our late, great, dear friend Ray Charles were alive, he'd be able to see it too. And I'll conclude with that.
Thank you so much, and I'm going to go ahead and move around the virtual family room to take John Cannon Bay. But I do want to say just really quickly, there's a web site, what I consider to be a white supremacist extremist website called Noontide. That's not noontime. Noontide is in tide in the ocean. Noontide Press. .com, and they sell these racist inspired books, and they also have videos, and they have opportunities for people to get on there and chat back and forth. Normally I would stay away from this type of literature. I know where it's all headed. I've known all my life where it's all headed, even from reading articles in the Montgomery Advertiser when I was a child. They were written by racists to attack the rights or the effort of people that I knew personally to achieve our human rights and civil rights. And speaking of something that you had alluded to, Brother Warren, personally I also suffered because one of my very close childhood friends was murdered by the KKK in January 1966 because of his efforts to register African-American poor people to be able to vote. And earlier today, he was killed, the same man that killed him, threatened him when he was at the courthouse after having driven some people from out in the rural areas to the county courthouse to vote. That same man told him he was going to kill him, and that night he did the deed and actually murdered my friend. So I do understand this very well. But anyway, moving on, Chick John Kennebay, what do you think?
First of all, good afternoon, everybody. And,
good afternoon.
I was thinking, is this institutionalized? It seems like it is going to be institution to bring about a change that may not be needed. I thought at one time in democracy is concerned about what percentage of the populace are participating in the democratic process. And I believe that percentage increased this last election, which to me that would be a good thing. Now, the percentage at one time was extremely low. When the percentage was extremely low, it was because of restriction on eligible voters. When I say eligible, one time all citizens, I think she had the right to vote, but some it was denied by some of the institutions that's supposed to protect it. I know this from experience, and those of us who experienced this, we have a deja vu that this is occurring all over again. It seems like I'm surprised the number of states that is involved in this 43. I'm surprised that high number of states that are involved in this. And is it because of fear of those who have been privileged losing this privilege that it was unfair for them to have it in the beginning? The playing field has been unfair for quite some time. I was listening to a report of a transformation of a community in California called Compton. And when they explained how it took place, I said that it had taken place in other places of the country. So it seemed like this may be institutionalized. So when you bury your head in the sand, you don't see for some reason or omit certain things that are occurring. So institutionalized efforts that affect a particular group or race, I think it's proper to call it institutionalized. I don't think there's any evidence of, if there is, to proportion to the reaction of instituting action that will make voting more difficult. So it's true. Some of us eyes to see and can't see, ears to hear and can't hear, and nose to smell and can't smell. So you're either sick or dead when that occurs. But this is my opinion as I see it. Different from other people, others don't see it. But this is how I see it. Peace.
Okay, thank you so much, Jake Don Cannonbay, and we're moving right around the virtual family room, and I want to welcome my dear friend, my mentor, my fraternity brother, Dr. Calvin Nobles. Dr. Nobles, welcome to our program again tonight, and you've heard the discussion so far. You heard the topic. What do you think?
First, I want to say good evening to everybody. Glad to be here. And I just get right into this. There's no point in belaboring what has happened over the past few weeks. I think one of the gentlemen on the line said it best. This was derived from the outcome of the most recent election. I think as black folk, what we need to do, we need to rise to the occasion like we did during the Jim Crow days. We need to show up and show out. That's what we need to do. We need to understand what we're up against. And we need to face the fact that we're up against this, and it is what it is. And we should show up in numbers that are so strong and so powerful that we can drive and change the narrative to drive what we want. And I think that's the only way you're going to get there. I mean, we got to find every possible voter and get that individual to the poll some way, somehow, so that we can not only just illustrate the power of us working together and having that unity, but also understanding that no matter what demands you put on us, we'll overcome that like we have in the past. And I think that's how we're going to put our stake in the ground. We're showing that no matter what you say to us or what laws you pose on us, we'll show up and we'll show out.
Well, I'm certainly on board with that sentiment, very much so. And thank you, Dr. Novosan. We're going to bring on my dearly beloved sister-in-law, Sister Stephanie, in just a minute. I just want to say that a part of the effort, if we look at the bigger picture, is for the Senate and the House to be regained as far as control is concerned by the Republican Party and not the traditional Republican Party. I will be honest and candid and admit that even though I didn't participate in any kinds of organized activities, but I did consider myself a Republican earlier in my life because as a child, it was the Dixiecrats, the Democrats in the South, that worked very, very hard and constantly passed legislation in the state houses or state legislatures to keep black people from enjoying civil rights. And it was the Republican Party, as had been the case with the old Republican Party during the pre-Civil War days, during the Civil War and the Reconstruction, that ostensibly came to the aid of the black people, even though I say this, you know, with reservations, because they had their own agenda. Certainly Lincoln was not a real friend of black people in terms of recognizing the human equality of black people, and that's been documented, but he did not believe that black people should be enslaved. He believed that black people should be freed and then removed from the body politic of America, which was a far-fetched idea, and it never could have happened. But, you know, it's interesting because back in the 50s, when this conversation was generated during the early part of the civil rights movement, people were saying, well, black people should go back to Africa. You know, the government should help black people go back to Africa. And I remember professors and administrators at the Tuskegee Institute that I would meet in the barbershop, and they would say, I'm not going to go back. I don't know anything about Africa. I'm never going to leave. To go back to Africa. I didn't come from Africa. So that spirit that these Republicans had, not all of them, but it was definitely personified in Abraham Lincoln and others who were for abolition but not for freedom, justice, and equality for black people in America. This Republican Party that we have today is nothing like the Republican Party that promoted those freedom amendments, the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments to the Constitution, called the Radical Republicans. These people are the Trump Republicans. And it seems, from what I've been able to discern, without them necessarily coming out clearly stating it, that their purpose is to maintain white supremacy, white privilege, by any means necessary. So that's my little take on all of that. Stephanie, welcome to the show, and happy Mother's Day in advance. And to all of you ladies out there who may or may not be biological mothers, but in my opinion, every woman is a mother by nature. In other words, the characteristics of womanhood were designed so women could be mothers in many senses of the word, if not biologically, at least spiritually. So to all of you ladies, I say happy Mother's Day. May God bless you all for the great work that you do in many ways to help children, to help their husbands, their brothers, fathers, uncles, all of the men of our communities. So Sister Stephanie, again, happy Mother's Day in advance. And what do you think about the conversation so far?
Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you for the Mother's Day greeting, and I agree with you. I have to say happy Mother's Day to all the women who are mothers, grandmothers, aunties, big sisters, and all, just all of that. And I'd like to say, well, I hope I'm not deviating too far from the subject, but like me, myself, my DNA shows me to be 90% African. And I'm born right here in the United States, as was my mother, my father, both of my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and I have a great-great-grandmother who came out of slavery. So, but for someone to tell me to go back to Africa, a foreign country that I know nothing about except what I see on television, read about, and look up, that's just ludicrous. I am an American, always have been, always will be. And as far as Democrats and Republicans, you know, my day and age, I've always voted Democrat because Democrat is for the people. Nowadays, Republican is for the rich and powerful, and they don't seem to care about anyone else that they're stepping on. It hasn't always been like that. But that's what it's turned around to. And when you have a Republican president who upholds and uplifts the KKK, our terrorists in this country, you know, it just makes you go against Republican. But we got to stand strong because strength is in numbers. And the more of us who stand up for something and for what's right, that's the more strength we're going to have on that subject or, you know, in those voting. So I say, yes, we continue to stand up for what's right and bring those numbers up. And thank you, everyone. I'm just trying to have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. All right. God bless you all. Assalamu alaikum and blessed Ramadan.
Well, alaikum salam. I want to give a special shout out to a particularly special person in my life that's fulfilled the role of mother, friend, wife, lover, confidant, and that's my dear wife, Mrs. Jacqueline Abui, and she's listening, so I want to say happy
right.
Mother. I love you, Jackie, and thank you for the mother
love
that
you
are. You've done for me and our family, and that includes
yes.
so many people. So God bless you. I'll be closing at 9 o'clock tonight, so we'll have a chance to go around one more time. But before I do that, I want to invite all of you who are listening via the internet. You've heard much conversation so far, and you maybe have some ideas, and I'd like to hear, and we would like to hear your ideas if you would like to share them with us. So the number to call is 657-383-0671. That's 657-383-0671. And so we'll go back to the top, starting with Ms. Bianchi, and we'll be ending with Ms. Bianchi as we usually do. But Ms. Bianchi, would you like to make further comments as we prepare to close?
Well, I was going to make some comments on you talking about Democrats versus Republicans. Blacks can't make no difference in a national election, nor a state election. They don't have the numbers unless they go in on some white cause. In Detroit, which has over 600,000 blacks, it's been Democratic since 1961. Buffalo, New York, 1954. Cincinnati, 1984. Cleveland, 1989. Miami, forever. St. Louis, which I know very well, for 72 years, since 1949. Milwaukee, 1908. Newark, 1907. They have Democratic cities. That's what they say. And, you know, it's a shame to think that all blacks are Democrats. They are not. Most of them vote their interest. And another point, as I was saying before, you know, blacks, there are 24 states where blacks make up less than 10% of the state's population. Of those 24, blacks make up less than 5% in 14 states. That includes children less than 18 years of age. Black population is over 20% in 8 states. In Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, Maryland, South Carolina, Alabama, North Carolina, Delaware. District of Columbia is not a state, although they like to make it one. And District of Columbia is turning white, as we see Atlanta is starting to do too. But it don't make no difference. Whites vote Democrat, they may vote Republican. So that's just the way it is. Black population in 2020 was 39.2 million. Of that, 22.4% was under 18 years of age. But the ones that can vote between 18 and 65, it's only 25.6 million. Those are the numbers. And as I said before, they're going to vote. They should be voting their interest. And if states or any place else come up with regulations that persons should follow, then they should learn how to follow those regulations. It's an embarrassment to say that you can't get ID to vote, but you can get ID to cash those lotto tickets in, which in some cases are more strenuous than voter qualifications. I mean, it's just perplexing. And maybe there are some out there that don't know how to do it. Well, I think there's more out there that do know how to do it. And that's the ones that I would have. I think those are the ones that's going to do things that they didn't necessarily have to do. Because people can claim racism all day long if they want to. They got a right to claim racism, holler racism. But everybody's not going to listen to that. I take my hat off to these school districts that's rejecting this critical race theory. Like the ones there in the St. Louis area. Hazelwood, Crestwood. I think they're going to try to make a move in the city of St. Louis. The state of Tennessee said, nope, we ain't going to have that here. And I think that's the right thing. That's what the parents want. That's what state statutes say in Missouri. Whatever the curriculum, textbook, teacher instruction is, that's up to the parents. It's not for teachers to bring things and try to force it upon parents. That's the parents' responsibility to accept what it is that they want for their children. And whatever laws is passed is going to affect everybody. I think you're seeing a lot of changes because you never have had this idea of mail-in ballots like we've seen in 2020. And what's wrong with having secure lock boxes? You can't have lock boxes in liquor stores. What's wrong with having surveillance cameras 24/7 on lock boxes? And also, at the end of the day, the contents is secured and removed by qualified people. Nobody's saying that a person can't have water in line. They said you can't have electioneering going on within a certain distance of the polling door. It have always existed. And what you got candidates that's putting their campaign literature and information on water bottles. You got some areas that I've seen where they had raffles for people to come out and vote. What kind of crazy mess is that? Cleveland Hammonds, who was the superintendent of St. Louis Public School one year, of course he's dead now, he had a deal going on where parents could register for a giant screen TV if they have their children enrolled on the first day of the season in September. What kind of crazy mess? You mean tell me the only way that you can have enough gumption to bring your child to school on the first day of the season? You got to be enticed with the awarding of a giant screen TV to come out and vote. You got to be enticed with some sort of raffle tickets, food and drink, Popeye's chicken and Arizona tea in one place. That's crazy. That's embarrassing, Mr. Washington. You know it yourself. The concern should be about other things than that. And as I said before, and you know another thing too amongst black population, and Calvin, you probably know this yourself, there's a great imbalance between males and females. You got 1.6 million, according to the 2018 census. You got 1.6 million more females than you do males within the black population. 1.6 million more black females than you do black males. And that's not counting the ones that would be desirable to get married. That ain't, that's not too good, Mr. Washington. I think you would relate to that yourself. Who are these women going to marry? They're going to have to turn to marry another ethnic group. White males, probably Hispanics. Asians don't marry black women. They usually marry their own. And 30% of your black males that has a bachelor's degree, they're marrying white. Or should I say they're marrying out of their race? So I don't think nobody's worrying about this thing about somebody's that's going to be in dire shape. Whites is going to be in dire shape because they're depleting numbers. Hispanics that come here, especially the ones that's indulged in business, they vote their interests, which be less taxes, less government regulations. They want school choice for their kids because they want their children to be caught up in these dilapidated school systems. My hat goes off to the state of Missouri. They just passed school choice, and they went to the governor, Governor Parsons' desk to be signed. And other ones are following suit. There's great hope on the horizon.
Ms. Pianca, you clicked off. I don't know what's going on, but you were talking, and then all of a sudden clicked off.
Well, I was done.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you so much for your comment.
You have a nice, you have a happy holiday.
Well, you're going to be coming back if you stay around for 10 more minutes for the last wrap-up. If you're going to be here, that's what position.
I'll
so
be here.
Move around for the wrap-up. So, Brother Warren, you know, you heard a lot of commentary, and certainly your post was more constructive and certainly very, very beneficial to the conversation. Would you like to make some final comments, please?
In response to the last caller's comments, I'm going to borrow the words of the late, great John Henry Clark. That ain't water he drinking in that water bottle. We hear a lot of these Republicans talking about the Anglo-Saxon way. It's a reminder of the Ku Klux Klan back in the early 1920s when they regrouped. And, you know, I listen to a lot of this talk about the federal government don't have powers over the state. If it wasn't for the federal government, a lot of the liberties African Americans say that they can enjoy today, they wouldn't be enjoying them. The talk of states' rights is racist talk. I told a white boy that last week. And if a black person is heard echoing and aping that talk, they should be verbally abused. If not, and I'll keep it at that point quietly, the Civil War was the federal government going after the states who felt that they wanted to pull away to maintain slavery. Each of them in their assemblies said that's why they were succeeding. How could a black person speak out against the federal government intervening on that point? The federal government intervened during the years of the 1950s and 60s. Voting rights, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. So when I hear people talk about the states' rights stuff, and speaking of the what the federal government can't do, particularly if they're a black person, then, as John Henry Clark would say, that definitely ain't water that they're drinking out of the water bottle. The efforts by these state legislatures to create new sets of rules for voting is a response to the 2020 presidential election. It's designed to chop into the vote that would be cast for Democrats to give the Republicans an advantage, plain and simple. Anything else is alcohol in the water bottle being drunk. Now, My DNA is 65% African. I come from a long line of Louisiana family people who were very proud of their African heritage. We would always sit at the table and talk about that ancestor who came from Africa and was a slave on a plantation outside of New Orleans. My family members were Garveyites. They were proud. Many of them looked like white people, but they were proud of their African blood. In fact, in family Zoom meetings the last Saturday of every month, we're looking at having a family reunion for 2022 in either Senegal or Ghana. Those are the two locations being considered. We're taking a poll right now, Senegal or Ghana, because that particular African ancestor we would talk about, we heard from the family members when we looked at the archival research, she came from Senegal. She was what they call a Pular, a Fulani. It's all in the documentation in Louisiana. And my grandfather was very proud of that. And my mother had a chance to visit Africa before she passed. And my father, of course, they went together. But my father has been more than one time to the African continent. So here in the New Orleans area, we pride ourselves on having probably one of the most African cities in the United States with our cuisine like gumbo. Gumbo is an African word. It's a dish that carried over from Africa. The best people to ever eat gumbo is in the home of a black person. So we can be American, but we can also be African as well. So I'm going back to Africa. I'll go back to Africa. I'll be going back to Africa in a few months. So that's a very important part of our identity. When we organized in this country, we named our institutions with the word African. We created the African Methodist Episcopal Church. In New York, we had a series of schools called the African Free Schools in the 1700s. Prince Hall created the African Lodge. We call it Prince Hall Mason Lodge today. A lot of black churches had the name Abyssinia or African in their name when it was started. So the historical archival data on the history of blacks in the United States shows that they've always identified with their African homeland. When Italy attacked Ethiopia in 1935, blacks all over the United States tried to enlist to go help Ethiopia fight. When Haile Selassie visited New Orleans in the 1950s, I had two cousins that was on that welcoming committee and got pictures that was not destroyed in Hurricane Katrina of them with Haile Selassie. When I was a boy, we have a hotel called the, I can't think of the name. It's just a five-star hotel. And all the blacks, when I was a kid, used to always talk about how Haile Selassie was the first Negro to stay in that hotel, the Roosevelt, I think, what it's called. And so these are things that I think are important when we talk about our history and the relationship that's never been broken with the African continent, whether it's Liberia, Sierra Leone, Ghana, Ethiopia. And that's why it's the most appropriate name for black people in the United States, African Americans, because we represent, our ancestors represented many different languages and cultures of the African continent, and the ancestors understood that. So when they organized as abolitionists against slavery, they didn't hesitate to take that word African as a unifying descriptor for the population that were mistreated and treated less than human beings and hold as chattel property. So I want to conclude on that. We must put water in the water bottle and take out the alcohol or the substances that cause us to hallucinate and not see reality. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Well, thank you. We're going to move around the table. Say John Kenan Bay is next, but I do want to say this. You know, I share your love for Mother Africa. I've visited Africa a number of times, not once, but at least three, maybe four times, as I can recall. and each time was a revelation. And the first time I went, I was actually able to go each time as a member of the United States Navy, the United States Navy, for allowing me the opportunity to travel to my motherland, our motherland. But the point of it is, when I first went, the first place I went was to the east coast of Africa, and we were in Djibouti for a few days. And as many people returning or going there for the first time, I kissed the earth of Mother Africa, and I felt that I was spiritually back home. But the most important thing that happened in that visit, because I'm a Muslim, and Djibouti, even though it was colonized and ruled by the French for quite a number of years, the culture is the Islamic culture. And, of course, those that don't know, Djibouti is actually an extension of what we would call the Horn of Africa, or the part that includes Ethiopia and Somalia. And the brothers that I met at one of the markets outside a few yards away from the mosque that I attended while I was there embraced me in a way that I have never been embraced before by a group of people in my life. It was like they knew that I needed to be back home for my own spiritual survival and development. And it was almost like the movie Roots, when the author of Roots went back, when he went back, Alex Haley went back to the Gambia, and the people gathered around him, and some of them were crying. That's what I experienced. I actually experienced that. And I never will forget, and I'm going to move on because I do have to go and others have to speak. So we'll wrap this up quickly. But my wife had a very good friend during a period of time in my Navy career when we were stationed on the island of Bermuda. And my wife wanted to get some cloth to give to her friend as a gift. Some cloth, I suppose, that her friend was going to make, you know, a dress with it. And so that was my intention, to get some of this cloth from Africa. Of course, a lot of the things are sold in Africa, as you may or may not know, in Arabia, actually made in China. So I don't know where this cloth was made. It was time for the shops to close. It was in the evening. A lot of shops closed around prayer time. Around sunset, because a lot of people would go to the mosque. They close the shops and go to the mosque to do the sunset or evening prayer. But this one brother, when I told him that it was very important that I got that cloth, I didn't know if I was going to get back the next day because I had duty on the ship, so I couldn't leave that day to go back there. And the day after that, I didn't know if we were going to still be there. And it was important I get it then. And he had a cousin that ran this clothing, not clothing, but this cloth shop up the road. And he ran up there and he asked his cousin if the cousin would keep the shop open long enough for me to get out up there to look around and pick out some cloth. And I rushed up there. The person had acquiesced and said he'd keep the shop open just for me. And I went up there, and I was able to find some beautiful cloth that I was able to load back on the ship and store and bring back to my wife, and she gave it to her friend. And I was just so elated with the reception that I got. And that's only one of many times that I had that kind of reception throughout Africa. You know, Djibouti is not the only place that I visited in Africa. But that was the first place, and that was such a great memory. And all the memories that I have were great, except for one thing I have to say, and that is the poverty that I saw. And that hurt me to see that poverty. But the spirit of the people in receiving me was wonderful. So I thank you, Brother Warren, for bringing up that segue for me to be able to say that about my experiences in the motherland. So we're going to move on as we conclude. Brother Sheikh John Kenan Bey, certainly you've heard a lot What would you like to comment as we close?
I would just like to say that present Africa and ancient Africa was affected by the Atlantic Ocean. Before the Atlantic Ocean, Africa as we know it today was Africa. America, America as we know it today was not America. America is a name applied to the land in the last 300 years. I would say that there's a river, and we say West Africa, but we're actually talking about Brazil. There's a river that runs alongside another river. That river is called the Rio Negro, the Negro River. It has black water, runs alongside the Rio Amazon, which is brown water. But it was our forefathers that named that river black. So no matter which school you go to America, very few will teach the truth about the people, the landmarks, the architecture, the paleontology, the structures on this land. They are monuments. They are the statues in this land clearly identify inhabitants here that are very much like the inhabitants across the Atlantic Ocean, what we call Atlantic Africa today. I'm saying a lot of us are at home and really don't need to leave here to be in what we think is our traditional home with Africa. Peace.
Okay, thank you, Sheikh John Kennedy. We appreciate that, and we're going to start the ending of our show. We want to go to Brother Dr. Calvin Nobles. He said he wants to hear your closing comments, Dr. Nobles. Please go ahead.
I just keep this real short in essence of time, but I just feel like we have a lot of work to do in terms of making sure we get back to the polls and get to the polls and get the results we want. I mean that I think, we all have to take a look inside of us and each one of us individually and decide which side of right I want to be on. And we all know there's only one side of right. And I feel that, we're just making a mockery of this country. There's too many people that's willing to pick, a political side. And by picking a political side, it's putting us on blue or red. And to me, I think we, the people, we should be driving towards what we really need. I think the political side of what we're dealing with in this country is going to be our demise. And I think we owe it to ourselves to understand that, politics is just a major crutch in this country right now. And we need to get away from it, and we need to start looking at people. We need to start looking at better government, better governance. And we need to start looking at a way to make this country as strong as we can, where everybody's been treated equally and rightfully. And we need to take an account when things are not right. We need to hold people accountable. And but one of my things I always tell people, they never hear me get on here and really politicize a lot of things, because I believe politics is really what's tearing us apart. And people are quick to pick sides. In this country, we've been known to pick sides, and picking sides is what's really tearing us apart. And, I mean, we see it, and we've been seeing it so clearly lately. So I just ask us to, look and try to find yourself and put yourself on the right side to do right, because there's only one side for right.
Well, that's a definitely wonderful.
Mr. Washington.
Closing point. Did someone want you to say something?
Yeah, I wanted, before you get to the closing remark, I wanted to make a suggestion for a topic for another program in the future. There are so many incidents that are being documented with the cell phones of white people literally verbally abusing black children, calling them the N-word, white women accosting black people, attempting to cause, and most of all of them in the process of doing this, they articulate some sort of support for Trump. They articulate support for, like, Derek Chauvin, who was found guilty. Or they make it clear they're on that Make America Great side. I mean, there's so many coming out daily that I think it should be a topic of a show. And then if it's a topic of a show, then we should ask anyone who has also been sympathetic with the Trump Make America Great program, what do they think about these white people accosting and confronting black children, calling them racial names, all in school, it's happening in classrooms, all on the virtual. They can't help themselves. They just let the mask come off. And I want to know what the black supporters of these people have to say. Are they in sympathy with these white people? Do they too want to go confront the black children on the side with the white people and call them the N-word? And there was one school was going to have a white support group for white students who felt compassionate for Derek Chauvin. You know, and so it's just so many of these things happening. If you gave me 1 hour, I could find you 20 of them that happened last week. All over the country, these white people, the mask is coming off. They losing it. They can't control themselves. They got to let the black people know how they feel and what they think. And they're taking this out on our children, most and foremost in the schools, on the school buses. And I think that if you choose to decide to do so, should be a topic. And I would love to hear what the lawn jockeys and defenders of this political perspective in America have to say about the attack on black children by these people. Are they for it? We're going to side with them and do it? Or are they thinking wrong? Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Okay, and to respond directly to that, usually once every month, maybe not quite once every 4 weeks, but usually at least once every 6 weeks, instead of me trolling the news as I usually do and picking a topic from the news that's prominent, I will announce that the topic will be caller's choice, which means that anyone, the panelists, can introduce the topic, and we will entertain a discussion concerning that topic. So in direct response to your suggestion, we'll have caller's choice, and you can bring up that topic with any background information that you want to present. Like I usually do a little research to present some initial background information concerning the topic, and then we will discuss the topic. What I really don't like is for the discussion to be about personalities or individuals, especially members of the panel. I like to discuss the issues themselves rather than how people take positions on the issues, because I don't want anybody feeling intimidated that they can't say what they believe, even if we don't like it or don't agree with it. I think one of the things about this program that has made it a vibrant program is that people have no reason to fear saying what they believe, even though it may be unpopular with the majority of us, some of us, but we certainly can entertain that topic next week.
I agree with you, Mr. Washington. We want everybody to be heard, but I want people to know that there are black people who defend these racist people and will fight for them to the death and attack our children. That's all. That's why, but you're right. You're correct. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much. And so that's what we'll do next week. It'll be caller's choice. And once we get the show kicked off, then you can introduce that topic and we can discuss that topic. Because it is important that we do discuss it, no doubt. Okay, moving as we close, Dr. Nobles, did you want to make a closing comment?
Oh, no. I made my comment. I'm good.
Yeah, okay. I didn't remember you did, but I just wanted to come back to you. Okay, then Sister Stephanie, and it'll be our close out with Ms. Bianchi. Sister Stephanie, did you want to make a closing comment?
Yes, I would. I would like to say, Dr. Nobles is right. We need to love, not only love the skin that we're in, like I was listening to that record again today, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And I am, I'm African American, and us African Americans We come in every color, from white to black, and everything in between. We are not racist. You know, I have several white friends, lots of them, and we try to just love each other as a people, you know, but it does bother me when there's a black person who really hates the skin that they're in, so therefore they put black people down on every chance they can get. And that, you know, we just have to pray for people like that because something's wrong with them, terribly wrong. So we will continue to stand tall for what's right and continue to go to those voting polls and don't listen to anyone who wants you to think that your vote's not going to count or you can't do anything. It's real insult saying that black women, who's going to marry them? What kind of mess is that to say during Mother's Day? You know, I love my husband, and I have lots of black female friends who are married and happy, such as I am, and my sisters. And so some stuff, you just have to let it fall on deaf ears. You know, or in one ear and out the other. And we have to stand strong. And power does come in numbers. So we have to continue to do what's right and do what's right for all people, you know, trudging forward. And thank you. Have a nice day, everyone.
Thank you, Sister Stephanie. And I want to give you a special shout out as well as my wife. I don't have to get into any details about it, but, you know, in our family, we have two little, they're not little, they're grown now, relatives that lost their mother in 2005. And I thank God so much that you and my wife have assumed the role of being mothers to these two wonderful young people that are growing in God's spirit. And it's because of what you have given them. You can never replace a mom. What you've given them in terms of motherly love, support, guidance, and affection and strength, they are able to make through this world. So happy Mother's Day to you, and God bless you, and God bless my dear wife, Jackie, for all that you all have done. In particular for these two children. So thank you. So we're going to have Mr. Pianchi give us our wrap up now, and we're going to close. So, Ms. Bianchi, your final words, please.
Well, if you need some kente cloth, if you want Ewe or Ashanti, and you know the Ashanti Akans, they were big slaveholders, by the way. As a matter of fact, they even sacrificed their slaves. It looked like the numbers are going to get too big, or they're going to overpopulate the empire. They start killing them off. And selling them off. That's how many Africans got here to this place, to what you call the Americas. They were sold off for various reasons. But if you want some kente cloth, then we can have some sent to you. Of course, you got to pay for it now. And you can choose whatever kind of design you want. My wife is Ewe. She's from the Volta region, Akansombo, of the Akumu. And they tell me a story. Blacks in America are American citizens. They are not Africans. Now, they can say what they want to. You go over there, you're going to be called a Bruni, Akata in the Yoruba, or Yabu with the Ibu. The Falanti was big slaveholders. In Ghana, you got 17 interior slave, former slave port, or should I say markets. And on the coastline, you had 25. Because it wasn't nothing new. Africans that was brought here was not unfamiliar with slavery, chattel slavery. So those human beings, that's what human beings do. Or should I have been doing. And it was involved in it thousands of years before they met any Western Asians. There wasn't no Europeans at that time, no Europeans per se. And I hear them say that they're Egyptians. They might be Egyptian because Egyptians was mixed. But the Cushites was ethnocentric. They was not mixed. They, God forbid, mixing. And that means mixing with what you would call today African-American. There wasn't no Europeans at that time. And you have had African societies that offer Black Americans land. Mugabe offered Black farmland. He said, you can have all the farmland you want. They didn't take it. So the white farmers, the commercial farmers that he expelled from the country of Zimbabwe, Nigeria took them. And they're farming in Nigeria. Kenya offered them land. They didn't take it. In the Volta region, in the area, in a stew called Fianca, which is returning from the fire is what it means. It was offered 35,000 hectares. Now, they ain't giving you this land. You got to do something with it. And see, here's the problem. Blacks in America don't know, very few know how to do something like that. And the River G in Liberia, that tribe made available 750 square miles, Mr. Nobles. 750 square miles. Virgin timber, water, fertile land. You can come over there and develop if you want to. Nobody's going over there and do that stuff. If you're not doing it where you come from, you're not going to do it where you're going. Only a few would do that. In any ethnic groups, whether it's Chinese, Eskimos, British, Indians. See how the Indians have came here to the United States and have become some economic powerhouses, especially the Patels and the hotel industry, where they extract about $28 billion a year or more. They come here and do that. That's the difference. People talk. And if you don't have an educational base, you have to have an educational base. Your children have to be educated in those areas of means. African countries, African tribes colonized too. Colonizing ain't nothing new. We're talking about colonizing Mars. But anyway, that'll be for another conversation. All the Brunies, be safe this week. Everybody else, enjoy Mother's Day, and it's a great American holiday. You are American, so enjoy it. Talk to you later, Mr. Washington.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Bianca. Thank everyone that's joined our panel tonight. Thank all of you that listen via the Internet, and we're going to close out now. And as we did last week, it won't be necessary for us to do it every week, but in the spirit of uplifting our people in spirit, and particularly for this Mother's Day, I do want to recite the lyrics to our theme song, Lift Every Voice and Sing. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Now, God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us thus far on our way, thou who hast by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Thank you all. God bless you. Happy Mother's Day to all the ladies
And may God keep all of us safe and unified. In his name we pray. Amen.